The Shoresheen Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Hello again, everybody. This is Bill Cloud, and welcome to our Torah tidbit, taken from the portion called Vayeshev, or "And He Dwelt," referring to the fact that following his encounter with Esau, and after a 20-year absence, Jacob began trying to settle down in the land of Canaan. The Torah portion begins in Genesis chapter 37, verse 1. Now Jacob dwelt, and that word is Vayeshev. Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. And so our portion begins by mentioning that Jacob settled, or he dwelt, in the land of his father's sojourning, as if to imply that Jacob did not intend to be a sojourner. He did not intend to be a wanderer, but had intentions on becoming a permanent resident. In fact, the word yashev literally means to sit, and it is related to the idea of settling down, even to dwell in peace. Now, looking at it from his perspective, if he's wanting to settle down, you would think that would be reasonable, because he had fathered the 12 tribes, he had survived a 20-year exile in Syria, he had survived a confrontation with Esau, and he had fulfilled his vow at Bethel. So why wouldn't he expect to settle down? Why wouldn't he expect to dwell in peace? However, unfortunately, peace was not to last too long, and he was still destined to wander a bit more. In other words, it was not possible for him to settle down completely because his purpose, his God-ordained purpose, was not yet complete. And that suggests that God's people are not purposed to sit quietly and idly, but are meant to be a light. And oftentimes we see that the light must go where the darkness is. This aspect of Jacob's life leads us to the one who would eventually become the leader of the family by going before Jacob into Egypt. Well, going before all of them into Egypt. And of course, I'm referring to Jacob's favored son, Joseph. Because the exile of Joseph into Egypt had to happen. In fact, it had been foretold to Abraham, in a manner of speaking, when God made a covenant with him, that covenant between the pieces years before. And so Joseph would lead the way, but all of Israel would follow, including Jacob, who would continue to be a sojourner. Now, I'm sure that you all know the story of how Joseph was favored by Jacob because he was his son by his beloved wife, Rachel. And Jacob made this known to all of his sons by giving Joseph a favored status. And he gave him that special multicolored tunic. And we read how God favored him as well and visited Joseph with dreams, dreams that predicted prominence, power, and influence, dreams that didn't set too well, however, with his very jealous and later on antagonistic brothers. And so it was that when Jacob had sent Joseph to check up on those brothers, that as they saw him approach, in Genesis chapter 37, beginning at verse 19, it says this, "And they said to one another, 'Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits,'" or some translations render it cisterns. "Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams." Apparently, the brothers didn't respond exactly the way Joseph thought they would to those dreams when he told him. And those dreams factor very heavily in this story. In fact, other dreams factor very heavily into this story. First, those given to Joseph by God, and later, those that he would interpret in prison, which we will come back to in just a moment. Now, the brothers, of course, hated his dreams, and they sought to prove that these dreams were not to be, never realizing, perhaps, I'm sure they weren't, didn't realize it, that their hostile actions actually played a role in those dreams they hated coming to pass. Now, rather than killing him, some of the brothers decided to send Joseph into exile, selling him to Midianites and to Ishmaelites as a slave, who then took him down into Egypt. And once he was in Egypt, the Bible tells us this in chapter 39, verses 1 and 2. Now, Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph. And I wanted to repeat that. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. So though it might have seemed that by being separated from his family, going into Egypt, into exile, that God had deserted him, allowing him to be threatened with death, sold as this slave, nonetheless, the Bible makes it clear that God was with him, even in his exile, even in his despair of being betrayed by his own flesh and blood. And not only was God with him, but the story also tells us that his master, Potiphar, realized that the Lord was with him. In fact, it tells us this, that the Lord blessed Potiphar's house for Joseph's sake. In other words, because Joseph was there. Now, all of this has great prophetic significance, but that isn't what we're really going to talk about today. What I wish to highlight today is the fact that even though Joseph had been promised power and prominence, and everything that happened to Joseph to a certain level or a certain degree seemed to say the exact opposite. The favor shown him by his master actually put him in another precarious and, as it turns out, consequential situation, namely that Potiphar's wife cast her eye upon Joseph, and that led to him being sent to prison falsely accused. We read in Genesis chapter 39, beginning in verse 20, "And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison." Of course, he hearkened to his wife. He believed the report of his wife. "He put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison." So even in the midst of this, it says the Lord was with him. And it also says that the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. And so Joseph, being favored not only by Jacob, but is favored by God. And so we see that throughout all of his hardships, God was still with him. God still prospered him in spite of his circumstances because, and this would be the main point, it suited God's purposes that Joseph should be in prison. You see, being separated from his family and then subsequently sold into slavery and then being tossed into jail put Joseph in the right place at the right time. Now, I realize that not too many of us would have liked that particular assignment, but if we are going to realize the glory that God has intended for us, then we must be willing to endure the suffering that is most certainly the prerequisite for it. I want you to consider that for a baby to be born, the mother has to go through the travail of childbirth, because without the labor, the baby can't be born. Likewise, when it comes to God's purposes for His people, you and I included, suffering is a prerequisite to the glory that He has promised His people. The Apostle Paul put it this way in the book of Romans, chapter 8, beginning in verse 17. "The Spirit Himself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God, and if children, then heirs, heirs of God and fellow heirs with the Messiah, provided," or another way we could put it, if we suffer with Him in order that we may be also be glorified with Him. I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. In other words, if we want to share in the glory with the Messiah, if we want to fulfill our purpose, then we must be willing to suffer with Him, which tells me He doesn't demand something of me that He isn't willing to do Himself. He, in fact, suffered that He might be able to enter into His glory. And He made this clear to those two perplexed disciples that He encountered on the road to Emmaus when He said this in Luke chapter 24, "O foolish ones and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Because they were perplexed that the one they thought was the Redeemer, well, he was crucified. But Messiah tells them, was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory? And so, serving as a prototype for what God expects of all of us, Joseph, the favored son, was destined to suffer. In fact, we could say that he suffered because he was favored. But now, why at the hand of his own brothers? Perhaps this too has something to do with what would transpire with the Messiah, of whom it is said in John chapter 1, he came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. So even though his brothers despised Joseph and didn't care for his dreams, and because they did not consider him to be then or in the future a ruler over them, he would become a ruler over them anyway, even if it was among the Gentiles, and they would indeed bow to him. Likewise, those who said of Yeshua, "We do not want this man to reign over us," will one day, nonetheless, bow before him. And so, like the cruel actions of Joseph's brothers, these actions, those that were committed against Yeshua, played a vital role in God's purposes. In Joseph's case, he was in Egypt so that he could be Israel's savior in a time of famine. And furthermore, Joseph being in Egypt would lay the groundwork for the Exodus and the journey to Sinai and the redemption and the calling of Israel. The rejection of Yeshua by his brethren laid the groundwork for God's greater purpose. And that now brings the story around to you and to me. You see, so many of us have felt, even known, that God has spoken to us about things, that God has made promises to us. And it seems, though, that everything in the world that happens to us mocks those promises and seems to say it's never going to happen. And maybe these kinds of situations even tend to cause us to doubt those promises or to wonder if maybe God wasn't speaking to me in the first place. I know that had I been in Joseph's shoes, I would have been tempted more than once to think I might have missed it, or maybe I hadn't even heard from God in the first place. But thankfully, we see that Joseph held on, and he continued being faithful. And that faithfulness paid off, not just for him, but it paid off for his entire family, actually an entire nation. I want you to consider that if Joseph had not been in prison, then he could not have met the cupbearer. And if he doesn't meet the cupbearer, he can't hear and then interpret his dream. And if he had not interpreted the cupbearer's dream, then how and why would he have been summoned later to interpret Pharaoh's dream and then to be subsequently elevated to glory, to power, and to influence? Because if he had not endured these things, how could he have seen the fulfillment of the dream God had given to him? If he had not endured all of these hardships, if he had not suffered, how could he have been in position to save all of Israel? And so let us learn from Joseph's story and so many others that are recorded for us in the Bible that just because it doesn't seem that the dream is coming to pass at the moment doesn't mean that God isn't with us. Maybe, as we see with Joseph, he's closer than he's ever been. And so then, while we're waiting for God's purposes in our lives to come to pass, while we're waiting for that dream to come to fruition, remember this principle that's really quite simple, yet very hard to embrace. If we want to see the glory, then we must be willing to endure the suffering. And that's it for this week's Torah portion and Torah tidbit. Thank you and shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BillCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.